Hey, Property Insider, I'm Mike Stenhouse. This is the Inside Property Investing Podcast, and you're in the right place if you're an active or aspiring property investor looking to grow your portfolio and build a business that works for you. I'm here to help you through advice and inspiration from our own growth over the past decade and from hundreds of interviews with other inspiring investors. Today's episode is all about answering one of the biggest, most frequent questions that we get asked, the one question to rule them all. Can you really become financially free from property investing? Now, we could have gone in a lot of directions with this one, but I wanted to keep it simple, I wanted to keep it actionable, and I hope that we have delivered. If you're in any doubt about whether you should start investing in property or whether you should continue with the efforts that you've made so far, then stick around and I'm sure you'll enjoy it. We've got a few more episodes on a similar theme to this coming up over the next couple of weeks as well, including whether now's a good time to invest in property and how to get started with your portfolio depending on the capital that you've got available to you. That's all to come, but before we jump into today's episode, let's just take a minute to thank our sponsors. I hate to admit it, but one of the most frequently asked questions we get whenever Victoria shares photos of any of our projects isn't how did we source such an amazing deal or how much profit do we make on that, but where did we get that amazing furniture from? Whether it's a funky sofa or some of the best bedroom packs you have ever seen, it is all from Landlord Furniture Co. We made the switch to them probably a couple of years ago now to ensure that our rooms remained at the top end of the market and continued to stand out from the competition. And to be honest, the responses we get to our adverts and from prospective tenants remind us constantly that we made the right decision. Not just from a posing on social media point of view, but also in terms of maximizing our profits through higher room rates and lower void periods. Whether it's a standard bedroom pack from one of their many existing ranges, or you want to create your own bespoke range of furniture, we know the guys can deliver something special every single time. Landlord Furniture Co. are great at running with a detailed brief, but if you've got no idea what you're looking for, they also offer a full design service and turnkey solution for you. But of course, it's not all about the aesthetics and the design. We obviously need to keep budget in mind and ensure that our furniture is going to stand up to the use that it sees in our houses as well. I am delighted to say that the team at Landlord Furniture Co. deliver on these aspects as well, giving us the whole package of cost and quality to keep me and Victoria happy. So whether you're an HMO or a serviced accommodation investor, if you're wondering how to make your next project stand out on spare room or on Airbnb, then Landlord Furniture Co. are your answer. Check them out on Instagram, visit their website at landlordfurnitureco.co.uk or give them a call on 0161 633 2651. And if you use the code IPI5 when you're requesting a quote, the team will give you 5% off your first order up until the end of April 2021. So go and check them out now and you will not regret it. So in today's podcast, I am going to try and answer the question, can you really become financially free from property? Now, it's a question that's not always phrased in that way, but I think particularly if you are considering property investment, if you're thinking about getting started, or you've maybe done one or two deals, but you're not sure whether it's the right thing for you to progress with, this question, this doubt has probably crossed your mind at some point in time. We often hear people who are negative or skeptical say things like, it's too good to be true. These stories that we see on social media or hear on podcasts, they've not actually achieved those results, or that couldn't happen to me. Or the other one we hear often is, well, why would I do that? It's not passive. And it doesn't need to be passive to still be an improvement on the life that you have got. But I'm going to try and break down a couple of things today and just help you figure out more than anything whether property is the right route or one of the right routes for you to become financially free. Forget about everyone else. Forget about what they have done, good or bad. Forget about what they think, good or bad. And just apply this to your own situation and make the decision for yourself. So we're going to look at a couple of things. We're going to look at what financial freedom actually is. I think that's an important place to start. We're going to look at what your goals are. And I've touched on this a lot recently in recent podcast episodes and on social media, so I won't dwell on it too much. We'll look at the different opportunities with different investment strategies. And then I guess we'll just wrap up with some final thoughts on whether or not it really is possible to become financially free from property. And let's be honest, there's no massive end of chapter or end of episode or end of season cliffhanger here. You probably know that my answer is going to be yes, I do think it is possible to become financially free, but I think you need to think about it in a certain way for it to become possible for you in your situation. And that's really what we're going to focus on. So, first of all, what is financial freedom? Why is it something that so many people aspire to? And is it the same thing for all people? Well, I think the answer to that question is no, certainly not. We are all individuals living our own lives, working towards our own destinations. And the idea that financial freedom means the same thing to all of us is absurd. So financial freedom, when we're talking about it, we try to break it down into three different categories. For different people, one or more of those categories may not be relevant. It may not be something that you aspire to. And equally, from a progression point of view, it's good to have three different stages that you can work towards rather than just have this massive end goal that feels unattainable. If you break it down into three different steps, then actually it immediately becomes more obvious how you can get to the first step, and then from the first step to the second, and then from the second step to the third. So those three levels of financial freedom that we talk about: financial security, financial independence, and then absolute financial freedom. And these are the three categories that you will have heard me talk about. You may even have written down or created the figures for your own life in our financial freedom goal setting guide. A lot of people have worked through that, and it's no different to that. But in a nutshell, if you haven't come across that before, financial security first and foremost is effectively having enough money to keep a roof over your head, keep food on the table, cover all of your essential bills on a monthly basis. That to me is financial security. If you lost your job and you had enough income from property or any investment that you could continue to pay your rent or your mortgage, you could continue to feed your family and your kids and pay your electricity and that sort of stuff, if that is taken care of from an investment-based income, then I would class you as financially secure. And going back to what I was saying there about having three different levels of progression to work through being more attainable, if your financial freedom goal is to have your own private jet and a Bentley in the driveway and a multi-million pound house, and you're starting from zero, that can feel very unattainable. But if you start off with this baby step of thinking, okay, well, let's just focus on getting enough money in that I can cover my current mortgage, my current essential bills, I can see how I do that, it teaches me a lot, and then once I've got there, I can move on to the next step. We see a lot more people get started and actually achieve results because they are focusing on something that is more attainable. It's something that can be achieved in a shorter period of time and keeps them motivated longer. So think about that for yourself as well. The reason we like to break it down isn't just to make them easier to understand, but also easier to achieve. So financial security is the first one. The second one is financial independence. And to me, I mean, this kind of takes on a little bit of different meaning for different people. As we go through these, they will become more and more unique to you. Financial security, everybody's going to have the same essential costs: housing, food, and, you know, heating and electricity. Financial independence is really about sustaining your current lifestyle. So again, if you lost your job, you would have enough investment income that you wouldn't need to change the way that you currently live. You could still go out and have meals in restaurants. You could still go on holiday. You could still maintain your car payments. Whatever it is that you have currently got going on in your life, you could maintain, and I would class you as financially independent if you could maintain that lifestyle, that quality of life from investment-based income.
if you lost your job, if you lost your main income, your primary salary, or whatever it is that you do for work. The third one, the final one that we like to talk about, is absolute financial freedom. And this is where you can have a bit more fun. This is things like the private jet, it's the house on the golf course, whatever it might be to you. Everyone's financial freedom targets and aspirations are wildly different. But thinking about what it is you would want to have in an ideal life is really powerful. Now, one of the reasons it's so powerful is because actually when you go through this exercise, you will probably realize that the amount of income that you need to have absolute financial freedom is a lot less than you think. When we speak to people about this and they give an off-the-cuff answer, it'll usually be something like, oh, I want £1 million annual income, or, you know, I want £10 million in the bank and then I could retire. And they break it down and they're like, wait, hang on a minute. Everything I want, I could probably get for whatever, 150 grand a year, 200 grand a year. Some people it'll be £500,000, some people it'll be multiple millions, other people it'll be less than 100 grand. But going through this exercise and understanding what financial freedom actually means to you is so important, because then it gives you targets to work towards, it breaks it down into these three individual steps, and it also gives you that realization that it's probably more achievable than you maybe thought it was just with this undefined idea of financial freedom. So when we're talking about can you really become financially free from property, I think the question you need to ask yourself first of all is, what does financial freedom mean to you? What does financial security look like? What does financial independence look like? What does absolute financial freedom look like to you? And that gives you a better idea of what you need to achieve in order to become financially free from property or investment-based income. But specifically here, we are talking about property. The second thing I want you to look at and I want you to think about today is what your goal is beyond financial freedom. Financial freedom is one aspect of it. And even within that, as you've seen, there are different categories or different levels of financial freedom. There are also different goals related to finances or money that you may strive for that other people aren't interested in, or vice versa. For example, are you looking to invest in property just to supplement your income? You're happy with your job, you don't mind going to work, you don't feel like you're, you know, working 60 hours a week, killing yourself for somebody else's dream. A lot of us are perfectly happy with the day jobs that we are in. So it could just be that you enjoy what you do, but you want a bit of an income boost. So that's fine. You're then supplementing your income versus somebody who dislikes their job or wants more control over their life, who wants to replace their entire income and possibly still earn more than they're currently earning just now. It might be that they're just looking to replace their own income. It might be that as well as replacing your own income, you actually also want to replace your spouse's income. You want to replace your entire household income from property so that you can both work on it, or you can both go and travel and you don't need to worry about day jobs. Or it could be that actually you're not so fussed about the income just now. It's more security for the future, for your future, early retirement, general retirement, your kids, your grandkids, leaving something as for a legacy for them from property investment. So even within financial freedom, there are lots of different things that you may be striving towards. So think about why you are doing this from a monetary point of view. What is it that you actually want to achieve? But don't just focus on money. There are two other categories of freedom that we like to talk about and I'd encourage you to think about. The first one is time freedom. Do you want more time to focus on doing the things you love or spending with the people that you love? For some people that is a huge driver, for others it's less important. But what does that look like to you? What does time freedom look like to you? And the second one is location freedom. So not so much about how you spend your time, but where you spend your time. Are you tied to a specific location? Have you got freedom to travel where you want? Can you work from anywhere, or do you not want to work and you want to be living overseas without the hassle of having to open your laptop and check your email every day? It could just be that you want to relocate within the UK. You want to be closer to family. You want to move out of the city. Lots of things can tie back to location freedom at a macro, a global level, or a more local level. But in a lot of cases, our current situations don't give us the time freedom that we want, and they don't give us the location freedom that we want. So although a lot of people focus first and foremost on financial freedom when they're thinking about property, I'd strongly encourage you to also think about what you want from a time freedom point of view and a location freedom point of view. And I think property can give you time freedom. It can give you location freedom. It is not a passive income, certainly in the main. It can be to an extent, but there is always going to be some element of, even if you've got a managing agent in place, you need to manage them. You need to make sure that they're paying you the rents and the right amounts. There's always going to be some amount of work. It's never going to be a truly passive income, but most of us will probably be a little bit more hands-on than that. Certainly in the early years, as we're growing our portfolio, we're going to have to put in more time. So it's not necessarily going to be a completely passive income for you, but it doesn't need to be a 40-hour-a-week job, a 60-hour-a-week job. It can be done in significantly less time. Lots of people manage it alongside a day job. Lots of people, when they leave their day job, they also reduce the hours that they work, and they maybe spend 2 hours a day working on their portfolio instead of 8 hours a day working for somebody else. So it can give you more time freedom for sure. It can also give you location freedom, and hopefully we are a good example of that. We are still working on our property business. We're still maintaining and growing our property portfolio, but we are doing it from a boat in the Med and hopefully eventually a boat in the Caribbean, or whoever knows where the wind will take us. For us, it wasn't so much about time freedom. I am spending my time on the boat working. I'm spending it chatting with our team back in the UK, looking for new deals, recording podcasts. I wasn't so passionate about stopping working or early retirement because I enjoy what I do, and that's great. But I wanted to be able to do it from a location of our choosing. I didn't want to be tied to Stockport. I didn't want to be tied to the UK. So we found ways to make our portfolio manageable remotely, and that involved systems and teams and all that fun stuff. And it is absolutely possible for us to continue to grow our business remotely. We have location freedom. We have achieved that. Now, you can have all three. Maybe it's just one of these that's important to you. But unless you go through this exercise of trying to understand what's important to you, first of all, it's then difficult to decide what the right path is for you to get there. So, gives you some ideas on what financial freedom actually is and how you can break it down so it's more meaningful for you. And then hopefully it gives you some ideas of how you can look at freedom beyond just financial freedom, also thinking about time freedom and location freedom and how you want them to factor into your current life and your future life. Now, I want to have a little look at the different investment strategies that are available to us when we are investing. I'm not going to cover them all, but I'm going to cover the ones that I think apply to the broadest range of people, the ones that most of us will have heard of and will be considering in some form or another. And just compare the income potential, compare the scalability of them, and I guess compare the ongoing effort required as well. So we'll start off with the obvious one, with single lets. It's always difficult to put numbers on these things. Invariably, everyone's personal experiences are going to differ, and one deal won't be exactly like another deal. One location might be better or worse for yields than another location. There will be other people listening to this podcast right now who have single lets that they're losing money on every single month. And at the same time, there will be other people listening to this who might be making close to £1,000 a month from a single let, or even more. But what we tend to see is an average of about £300 per month profit on a typical single let, you know, a terraced house, a semi-detached house, after you factor in things like voids and maintenance, interest-only mortgage payments, management fees, insurance, and so on. Now, I don't think that's bad. £300 a month, if you've got 10 of them, you have yourself a £3,000 a month income. That's pre-tax, of course, but that's the world we live in. And I expect you're probably an above average earner. But that's still, that £3,000 a month is still a 38% increase over the average UK salary. At the moment, I think it's about 26 grand. So 36K a year from 10 single lets is almost a 40% increase on the average UK salary. Even if it took you 10 years to get there, and I don't want you to misunderstand me here. I'm not saying it needs to take you 10 years. It's infinitely possible to achieve more in less time. But even if it took you 10 years to buy those 10 single lets, houses, properties, flats, whatever, That's like adding a third earner, a third income to your household. Now, our current alternative plan has got Victoria struggling with morning sickness misery for 9 months. Then, as far as I'm led to believe, 18 years of that investment costing us money. And I'm pretty sure as soon as they do become cash flow positive, they'll move out and we won't see a penny of it anyway. So, you know, compared to having kids, single lets have a pretty decent income potential if it takes you 10 years. I'm joking. I'm just in this sort of baby brain fog at the moment about how my life's going to change, and I don't really know what that looks like. But single lets definitely have a decent income potential. What about their ability to scale then? I mean, they're not bad in some respects. They're pretty easy to find compared to other investment options. So that's definitely a tick. As long as you get the purchase price right, people are looking to rent single lets all across the country from major cities to rural locations. And they're looking to rent houses and properties of all shapes and sizes as well. In a normal market, then there should be plenty of stock for you to choose from. There should be plenty of options available to you, whether you want to buy houses or flats, regardless of the location that you want to buy, and regardless of what your budget is, there are normally plenty of options for you to choose from. And at the same time, there will normally be plenty of demand from people who want to rent those properties from you. But the downside, compared to some of the other investment options that we'll go on to shortly, is that to get to that £30,000 income, to get to your 10 single let property portfolio, that's 10 individual deals to source. It's 10 times going through the conveyancing process, through the mortgage application process, and 10 renovations that you need to manage. Each additional unit in your portfolio is effectively starting from scratch, and that'll make more sense when we compare it with the other options, why they're not necessarily always starting from scratch if you want to add more units to your portfolio. But with every new single let, you're effectively back to the drawing board. On the other hand though, as far as the ongoing effort goes, you've pretty much hit the jackpot here. Sure, some tenants go bad and you'll have issues with rent collection or maybe with damages to the property, but that's not unique to single lets. Typically, single let tenants will stay longer. They will have fewer management issues to contend with. My only real counterpoint to this is that with a single let, when your tenant does leave or if they do stop paying the rent, that's your entire income gone for that duration. With an HMO, on the other hand, if you have 5 tenants in a house and one of them leaves or one of them stops paying their rent, that's only 20% of your revenue gone. You've still got 80% of your income. And that always gives me some extra peace of mind, knowing that I've got that stability across my income. So generally then, single lets are a pretty solid bet. The income isn't amazing, but it's not bad. They're usually pretty easy to find. They're easy to let and they're easy to manage. But on the downside, that scaling aspect of having to go back to the drawing board, having to go through every stage of the process again for each deal, for each unit, for each increase in your income, that's something that you want to keep in mind. Next up, let's talk about HMOs. Now, you're probably going to think I'm biased on this one, but, well, I guess I am a little bit biased. There are just so many good reasons that we have focused on them for so long and why we continue to do so. Starting off with the income potential. Now, whilst a typical single let might make £300 per month, a typical room in one of our HMOs that maybe only makes us £200 per month profit. Our own average is actually a little bit higher than that. I think it's around about £250 odd. We've tracked those numbers across dozens of rooms for years, including every single cost, every void period, and so on. But as a basis for this discussion, let's assume £200 per room. We're then falling a little bit short of that single let house. £300 per month for a single let, £200 per month for a room in an HMO. But, and I'm sure you can see where I'm going with this, it is a big but. Each house has multiple rooms, and each of those rooms makes £200. From the smallest HMOs with 3 or 4 bedrooms up to larger houses with 10 or more bedrooms, you're getting multiple rents from the same property. Now, personally, we tend to err on the larger side with our HMOs. We like to convert commercial buildings into 6 or more bedroom shared houses for young professionals, with each individual house earning us an average of about £1,500 per month, and the larger ones clearing £2,000 in pre-tax profit every month, which is basically an average UK salary from a single property. That's not a bad income at all. But even on the smaller side, where a lot of our students on the Inside HMO Investing Program choose to start and where a lot of other people choose to start, a small mini HMO could be making £600 to £800 a month, at least double the income from a single let, if not more. So the income potential is amazing, and that's tied to the scalability as well. If you do one deal and make £800 per month, then when you're ready for your next one, you could still just do one deal, but you could scale up the number of rooms within the property to scale up your income within the property. Let's say you did a 4-bed and then a 6-bed. That's £2,000 per month from two deals versus the equivalent 6 or 7 single lets you'd need at £300 a month to get the same income. You've also got a fraction of the time and effort sourcing deals, buying them, renovating them, and refinancing them. You've got to do that twice instead of 6 or 7 times. Now, more effort needs to go into finding the right property in the right location for your target customers. But that's all stuff that can be figured out. It's more effort, but it's not impossible. And we've actually got a free training coming up in a couple of weeks on this subject about finding the right location for an HMO, which I'll share details on at the end of this episode as well as in the show notes. Now, the other thing, there's also no denying the ongoing effort is more than a single let. But it always tends to be the people who actually don't have any HMOs who complain the loudest about how difficult they perceive them to be. Plenty of HMO investors, actual investors in the trenches doing this day in, day out, including ourselves, think that actually some of the advantages of managing HMOs, like having a single gas safety certificate, a single EPC, or a single monthly inspection for multiple tenancies, as well as the stability of the income from multiple rental payments for a single property, these all outweigh the downsides of a typically shorter tenancy duration, which is one of the biggest disadvantages, compared to a single let where it's maybe 2+ years. Our average tenancy length is about 12 months in an HMO, so we have higher turnover and that brings more management. That's one of the big downsides. The other one is the occasional dispute amongst tenants, amongst housemates who don't always get on or have different opinions or live in different ways. But like I say, typically far outweighed by the positives and by some of those economies of scale that you do get with HMO management and getting multiple incomes with only 1x the overhead. So the income potential is considerable. Just one or two deals can replace a salary or give you long-term financial security. The effort needed to scale is reduced because you can ramp up the size of properties you buy and the income will increase with it. A single purchase, a single renovation, but a considerable jump in profits. But there is some additional effort or risk in getting the right deals in the first place, and then some additional effort in the ongoing management. Whether that's a lot of additional effort or a little additional effort is open to interpretation, but you're going to have to do some extra work at least to get those extra profits. There's no denying that. Okay, service departments are the next strategy to discuss. Another option where people see the high returns and think it could be a quicker route to financial freedom than a single let portfolio, and on a deal-by-deal basis, they're certainly appealing. We've got 4 in our portfolio now, so 2 of those have been up and running for a couple of years, and another 2 have been live for less than a year, which when you factor in all of the travel restrictions and the COVID stuff recently, doesn't exactly give us a fair representation of the market longer term. But generally speaking, they do well. In our area, which isn't a major city, it isn't a tourist destination, we get about £70 per night for a 1-bedroom apartment and about £95 per night for a 2-bedroom apartment, which is good money. Even at the 70% occupancy rate most serviced accommodation operators will say is a good target to aim for. So out of every month, you'd expect 70% of your nights to be booked. The gross revenue based on those numbers at 70% occupancy would be, you know, about 1,500 at the low end for the one bed, up to about £2,000 for the two bed per flat per month, depending on the size. But the running costs can be high as well. You've got higher management fees, and then you've got things like the laundry costs and the cleaning fees. Now, don't get me wrong, even with those additional costs, you're still probably looking to at least double the profit that you would make from a single let, which is good. But just how scalable is it? A lot of more conservative industry commentators see it as the next strategy to come under tighter restrictions and regulations, and something that's got a potentially short future. Now, I think the reality is there will continue to be demand, and therefore investors will continue to meet that, at least to an extent, but possibly with more controls like licensing or change of use restrictions that you already see existing in the HMO market. I do have genuine concerns about saturation here, though, which I don't have these at all with the HMO or the single let markets. And I've spoken about this before, and I'll do so again in an upcoming episode about the HMO market. But with them, I see strong demand in the single let and the HMO front continuing to grow in line with the growth in supply. But specifically in relation to serviced apartments, the barriers to entry are so low that anyone with a flat or a single let house can pop it on Airbnb and see what happens. We've noticed a considerable increase in HMOs in our area since we started investing. Yet we still fill rooms without issue because the market is growing on the demand side as well. But with the short-term accommodation, unless you're in a tourist area or in a city centre, I think there is a genuine cap on that demand. So we'll see more people trying it, maybe making money from it in the short term, but realizing then how much extra work is involved, or that they don't have the marketing focus to keep occupancy rates high, and longer term, they'll probably fade back into the single let market or maybe even sell up. Now, don't get me wrong, I love our serviced apartments, our serviced accommodation. I love the new challenge that they provide. I also love the income from them, but it's not something that we're looking to scale aggressively. I see projects that are shared on social media of entire new build apartment blocks earmarked for serviced accommodation, and I just cringe wondering why some backwater town needs 37 holiday lets. I just really hope they haven't resorted to that because it's the only way to make the deal stack. But I will say I'm far from an expert in this space, and there is every chance that they could know something that I don't. At least I hope they do. So, yes, income potential of serviced accommodation is great, although I have concerns about being able to scale a sizable portfolio focused mainly on this strategy, and the ongoing effort is significant. Customer demands are far in excess of any tenant that we've come across. You'll have checkouts every couple of days, and juggling cleaners in a short changeover window are just a few of the additional efforts that you're going to have to make with this strategy. Like I say, I am super grateful for the ones we have, and I think the right property serving the right niche can be a great boost to a portfolio, but I'm always aware that at some point the market may change, either through legislation or competition, and that cash cow could revert to a single let income. Now, the final strategy I want to discuss with regards to financial freedom is flipping houses, flipping apartments, whatever, buying a property that needs some love typically, renovating it and then selling it on for a profit. It's how we got started, and we've actually just completed one recently that eventually made us a small profit, albeit not as much as we were hoping for, and I'll share more details on that once I'm a little bit less bitter about the whole experience. But the income potential can be great. Low-cost deals can make 10 to 20 grand profit in a six-month window, and the upper profit potentials are pretty much uncapped. But the reason I've left it to last today, and the reason I'm not going to spend too much time on it, is that, like I shared at the start, When it comes to a discussion around financial freedom, I think most of us actually mean more than just financial freedom. We want some control back over our lives. We want more time, or we want more location freedom, if not all of the above. And the big issue with flipping is it's a constant merry-go-round. As long as you want to make money, you need to keep working. Keep finding the next deal, keep managing the next renovation, keep waiting for the sale to complete. I would never say don't flip houses. I'd never say that even if your focus was on single lets or HMOs or any other rental-based investment, that you shouldn't consider flips alongside that, because sometimes a deal comes along that it's right to flip, or sometimes a flip can boost your cash pot so that you can buy the next long-term investment. But if you're looking to become free, and your definition of freedom isn't just creating another job for yourself, then I don't think flipping should be your main focus. If we go on holiday for a month, or I want to take an extended break this winter when we've got a baby, I know I can do that and we'll still have an income from our rental properties. Now, the business might not grow as quickly, we might have a few more issues that crop up, but ultimately, we'll still get paid every month from now on, whether we work or not. That's not the case with flipping, and so to me, that's not really a route to financial freedom. The final thing to discuss is how long all this will take, and that's another treacherous question to try and answer, but I've tried before, and I will always continue to try again. We actually released a podcast with our five-year roadmap to £5,000 in income. It was about 2 years ago. I think it was around January 2019. One of our most popular episodes to date. It's episode number 258, if you want to go back and listen to that to find out more about what we would actively do. And it basically outlined, first and foremost, how we did it, what our first 5 years looked like. But it's also got a few tweaks in there to explain what we'd do differently if we were doing it again. But 2 years later, 2 years after we released that episode, I still think those sorts of numbers are perfectly feasible. And we've shared similar stories from all sorts of investors over the years who have exceeded that as well. On the podcast, if you've listened to this for any length of time, you will probably be impressed with the numbers that you hear just as much as I am from some of the great investors that we get on. Jules and Ben spring to mind. They were on the show at the start of 2020 talking about the 3K income that they'd created in 18 months. That was episode 298. And then Sarah Watt shared her story in episode 339 earlier this year about the three HMOs that she'd added to her portfolio in a year, more or less, actually by going against the grain and buying houses that didn't need big renovations. And I think she's bought two more deals since then as well. So there are no rules, really. The timeline has to be your own. How much time have you got? How much passion and hunger have you got? And how much capital have you got, or can you access? You obviously need expertise as well, but you don't need to know how to do 10 deals before you get started. You just need to know the next couple of steps, and then you can figure the rest out as you go. We certainly didn't know how to hire people, or what a JCT contract was, or how to raise capital from private investors when we started out flipping houses alongside our day jobs a decade ago. But we did know how to strip wallpaper, and how to check Rightmove to see if houses on the street in a better condition had sold for more money than we were about to buy this one for. And then we jumped in. So, to go back to the original question, to wrap things up then, can you really become financially free from property investing? Ultimately, I truly believe that the answer is yes. But the route to that will be different for you versus someone else, because your destination is different to someone else's. So, whilst it is possible, to make it a reality for you, it starts with understanding what that freedom destination is. Financial freedom, sure, but also thinking about the rest of the life that you want to live, which can usually be categorized under time freedom and location freedom. Your own resources and starting position will make a difference as well in terms of how much time and how much money you've got to commit to this. And then the strategy that you focus on is possibly one of the biggest questions to answer. Although what you do for the next 12 months doesn't need to define what you do for the rest of your life. I see so many people that get caught up and never start because they're so concerned about picking the right strategy or the right location, thinking that once they've done that, they can't change their mind. Go and do one deal, survive, learn, and then if you need to change, if you need to pivot for the next deal, fine. There's no issue with that. Nobody's saying you can't do that. From a strategy point of view, single lets, they're slow and steady. We like them. They're consistent. They're not the most exciting. They're not going to get you there in the quickest period of time. HMOs are my personal favorite, with increased income and increased demand. Serviced accommodation can be a great addition to your portfolio, but outside popular destinations, I'd be reluctant to overinvest. And then flipping, whilst it has its merits and will likely play a part somewhere in your own story, I don't personally think it's the right answer as a core focus to get you to financial freedom. Unless, of course, maybe you just need a pot of cash and then you're going to sell up and disappear to a beach somewhere and live off coconuts. So, three final thoughts I want to share with you as well. First, remember that property is an incredible way to achieve financial freedom in a reasonable period of time, but it is certainly not a get-rich-quick scheme. If that's what you're looking for, you're in the wrong place. Second, the sooner you treat your property efforts more like a business, the sooner you'll see the rewards of true freedom across all three categories. Making loads of money is no fun at all if you're still having to work 80-hour weeks and you can't take a holiday. And thirdly, the only way you will ever get there is if you start. And the sooner you start, the sooner you'll get there. So I hope you enjoyed today's episode. And if you stick around for a couple more seconds, I'll share the details with you for that upcoming free HMO training that I mentioned earlier in the episode. Thanks for joining me for today's podcast. If you are thinking that HMO investing might be the right next step for you, then you are in the right place. You know that we love them and you know we have good reason to, with the income that they generate and the lifestyle that they give us. But one of the biggest struggles that we see new investors come up against is whether HMOs will work in their area. So we've got a free training coming up in a few weeks where I'll be showing you exactly how to identify the right areas to invest in, as well as sharing a lot of other useful insights into starting your own HMO portfolio. For all of the details and to register for that free training, go to insidepropertyinvesting.com/free-training. That's insidepropertyinvesting.com/free-training. I'll also send you a free copy of our 22-page Introduction to HMO Investing guide as soon as you register to help you understand if this strategy is right for you. That's all for today. Thanks again for listening, and I'll talk to you soon.